All right, this is the hour, Conversations with Linda, your phone calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Linda, before we go to calls, lots of emails about the Baltic Sea story of that underwater craft. Any updates on that?
I sure wish there were. I have kept in touch with Lundberg and those guys, and I think that the last communication was they were very much needing more money to do the kind of diving that they wanted to do with the scientific equipment they needed, and I don't know if they have accomplished that yet.
No, I haven't heard that yet either. So what have you been working on lately? What's going on with you?
I've just done 4 half-hours tonight that are 4 of about 20 subjects that I'm working on. And I guess for me personally, it's been very meaningful. I have been working very hard on getting out my second edition, first printing on my first book, An Alien Harvest, that I put together literally on a floor from a typewriter with scissors and scotch tape back in 1988 to 89, and would drive to Boulder, Colorado, where they had those little tiny floppy disks, and then I would have to drive boxes of those up to Pioneer Printing in Wyoming, and the book sort of came together like it was carved out of stone back then. And today, it has been an experience to go back feeling, I think, part of what has been amazing to me is that a book that I wrote 35 years ago with 460 pages and hundreds of documents and photographs and illustrations is as modern and current and up-to-date and relevant in 2014 as it was then, because the animal mutilations, extraterrestrials, law enforcement knowing that they're dealing with something that is highly strange and advanced technology, all of the pieces that were in that first book are still today absolutely as current as possible, and I've been able to update it. So in all of that, my focus has been sort of going back to An Alien Harvest and bringing it back up to 2014 and going beyond. And that book is going to be out by August. And it's like one of those things that you work so hard that it was like sculpting it literally out of flesh and stone. And today, that book is perhaps one of the more meaningful to me because it was where all of this started. My interest in other intelligences was because I started out in pure innocence trying to understand what was happening to all these animals, bloodless and trackless, and ending up with law enforcement telling me the perpetrators were creatures from outer space.
All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to John in Seattle, Washington, to get things started, west of the Rockies. John, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey. How you doing, George?
Good, John.
Yeah, well, not to get too far off track, but I have a story about a Bigfoot experience over here in Tiger Mountain, over here in Squaw, Washington.
You're right in the spot, that's for sure.
Yeah, but basically, I haven't been too much of a believer about it. I mean, until I had this last summer. We were up there hiking, doing like a three-day hike, camping trip. We're just walking along and just camping wherever we felt we needed to camp for the night. And it started out with rocks throwing basically at first, and we thought it was somebody that was supposed to be tagging along that was coming a day later. And it got to the point where it was happening for about 20 minutes straight. And one of my friends, Mark, went to the bushes to use the restroom and came back and said something back there was wrestling around. And so we all went out there to investigate. And two of us actually came to maybe about 20 feet contact with, I guess you want to call it a Bigfoot.
Jeez.
Behind a tree.
What did it look like?
Everybody said like a gorilla, but I don't know, not like a gorilla, because he was standing like a human being would be standing, but...
Did he have human features, his face?
Yeah, well, his nose isn't that big. It's more flat,
like an ape?
Like a big, wide nose.
Yeah.
And his face isn't really all that hairy. I mean, he gets pretty hairy, like, on the lower, like, chin, high cheekbone area.
Linda, have you interviewed people on Bigfoot?
Oh, yes. And in my third book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness, I have a whole chapter that is focused around a man up in Snohomish, Washington, who was out pulling weeds on his dad's property when, coming up above these tall, tall pine trees, suddenly, just bang, it was there, a big silver disc right at the top of the trees. The trees started swaying. There was no wind, but there was something going on between the craft and the trees. The next thing, he's standing there in complete stunned awe, and what looked like two columns of transparent air came down from the craft down to the ground. And when I say transparent air, he had a hard time trying to sketch and describe. He said it was like you're looking at the air, but it had spherical, some kind of a shape to it, and you could see right through these columns that came out of the disc, two different beings that he said reminded him of Filipinos, but their faces were not human, and they were wearing sparkly blue leotards. And they came down on the ground and started walking off, and the next thing, right out of the same craft comes a huge Sasquatch, Bigfoot, comes down also in one of these translucent columns, gets to the ground. He is scared to death, and the Sasquatch took off after the blue, sparkly, leotarded extraterrestrials. And over again in the human abduction syndrome, there will be cases where people say they're on a craft, they're in a room, and that a Sasquatch is sitting there. It reminds me of Chewbacca in Star Wars,
yeah.
But it may very well be that if there has been genetic manipulation all over this planet for a long time by different extraterrestrials, that they make various kinds of things that they need to do work for them on planets, and that the Sasquatch might be a genetically manipulated being that does work with extraterrestrials in some way and stays based on this planet.
We have Joe now, truck driving in Wisconsin. Hey, Joe, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you, George. Long-time listener here. Love your show.
Thank you.
Linda,
yes.
Past Coast to Coast shows, I've heard about some tunnels that people have found pretty much man-made. I wonder if some of the noises that people are hearing could be related to that.
I don't know. I get a lot of emails asking me about tunnel boring machines and what the U.S. government
could
might be doing underground. And the problem, I think, is this isn't confined to the territories of the United States. These strange sounds since the beginning of 2011 have been both heard, reported, and recorded all around the world. Probably the most outstanding of all time is Kiev, Ukraine, that has been self-destructive in the last 3 or 4 months. But back in August of 2011, that is when the woman made the recording on her balcony. It lasts about 12 minutes and is the trumpet sound in Kiev. And there are hundreds and hundreds of recordings all over the planet. And so that, to me, right there, you have to accommodate all of the facts. And the facts are that all of these strange sounds, whether it's been booms, which have been reported all over Europe, too, that we have a whole planet, and the whole planet is reporting these strange sounds.
Linda, it is remarkable what may be going on in this planet. When I heard those sounds, to me it sounded like either some ET group carving away at the planet for some reason, or us. And the fact that it's happening worldwide tells me that it might be something much bigger than that.
Well, remember 3 years ago, I think it was, that there was this distribution. It started down in Nexus Magazine in Australia. And they had a reprinting, allegedly excerpts from 20,000 pages, is the way it was described, of transcription that came into a computer in South Africa, in Johannesburg, operated by the Central Intelligence Agency in one of our many international offices. And that it was a shock. The year that this was allegedly occurring began in, I believe, 1998. And nobody knew anything about this until Duncan Rhodes had a contact, supposedly from one of the CIA people involved, who gave him excerpts because the CIA operative had been working on the translation. And the short form is they came to become convinced that what was downloading all of this information into the CIA computer in Johannesburg, South Africa, was an intelligence in another dimension. And it is the intelligence that says that it is not in our dimension. It is in another dimension that is very well aware of this one, and that they know that periodically in a cosmos that is made of different dimensions, that they become around in cycles, overlaps of dimension in which the two dimensions will interact, and that there will be strange sounds and list all of these things. And this was 1998, finally revealed about 3 years ago. And then Duncan and I worked together. I've done Earth Files reports about all of this. So the strange sounds was mentioned as a byproduct of dimensions interacting, and that this intelligence was communicating to the CIA computer in Johannesburg that it knew that we humans had no knowledge of this, and that they were interested in what was going to happen, and that this dimensional intelligence had been given some permission to go ahead and try to communicate. Well, since that time, there were markers of the deaths of world leaders in various events in this Chani material, 20,000 pages of which has been excerpted, in which many of the people listed have passed just in the last year. And those were supposed—
That's strange all by itself.
It is. And so the passing of those particular leaders and names were supposed to be the signal that the dimensional overlap would become more intense. Well, who knows? I just know that the hard physical facts of people being out in a place like a mountain or their backyard or wherever it is, I completely know that these people are trying to tell the truth, because we have so many of the recordings that have been put around on YouTube, and that these are reliable, credible people. And something is extraordinary is happening. And as many people have said to me on the phone or have written me in emails, Linda, in the United States, this government says that terrorism is at the top of our list of national security interests. And if people are, in some cases, five counties in Georgia, all at the same time calling 911 and police and fire, and no one from the feds, no one from Homeland Security is making a single comment when they've got sidewalks cracking and garage doors going off because of percussion of something. Well, that seems to me to mean that the government has been so silent since 2011, when all of this has begun and it continues, they have to have some knowledge. And that whistleblower last year, who came to me saying that there was that Hill Air Force Base geophysicist who was trying to study what was happening on the internal core of the Earth in relationship to the ionosphere, and the possibility that infrasound was being translated into loud sounds, all of this says that in that case, the Hill Air Force Base guy couldn't talk to me on the record because he was afraid of losing his job, as so many people in the government are now, whether you're talking about honeybees, nicotine poisons.
We called that one, didn't we, years ago?
Well, it was Hackenberg in Pennsylvania. He knew, the beekeepers knew, the nicotine-based pesticides were the brand new things on the block, and they were worried about them then. And what I mean is, we're living now in a nation and a planet where so many things are being covered up, whether it is what is killing honeybees, extraterrestrials from someplace else interacting with this planet, that we are at a point where sounds like loud metallic sounds shattering the silence on the top of a mountain on this island on the west coast of Alaska is something that is being heard by other people. And media aren't covering it much because it's not supposed to be, and the government is stone silent. So where does all of this end up?
Where does it end up? That's a good question. Let's go next to Chris, truck driving in California. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, George. Great show tonight. Linda, how you doing?
Hi.
I have a serious thought on this whole sounds that are being heard all over the world. My conclusion to this is, I bet you anything, the Earth's climate has been destroyed by mankind. We have completely depleted the planet's climate. So therefore, they came up with satellite ways of beaming rays into the planet to try to jumpstart the weather system, going, hey, it's been a little too hot over here. It's starting to nuke stuff. We better cool it down. And so then, bam, all of a sudden you hear that sound. And it's like that lady that was on her porch. And she heard, you know, on the news, they said, oh, yeah, weather's going to be coming in, and then, bam, she heard that sound. And shortly after that, a hardcore rainfall and everything else started in right behind it. I don't know. It seems a little suspicious to me.
Well,
and nobody's going to say anything.
I understand that you're saying that if there are so many secrets the government is keeping, they might be trying to affect the weather with frequencies or infrasound or some sort of sound. And none of us know, and I certainly can't prove one way or the other, but let me just leave you with one thought.
About 30 seconds, Linda.
The dinosaurs were at a time when the entire planet, Arctic and Antarctic, was warm and hot. The difference is we humans, through CO2 and methane, we have been heating this planet up more rapidly than any time known in the scientific record. That's the problem.
Linda, we're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM, and we will take final phone calls with you. And also, just a little reminder to download our free apps in the App Store for your iPhone or your Android-based system. And if you need to email Linda, that's earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And I'm George@coasttocoastam.com. Okay, I'm going to be attending the International Remote Viewing Association conference this weekend in the Las Vegas area. So David Schrader will be filling in for me while I'm on assignment, meeting some great people who have been superb remote viewers. I'll come back and tell you about that on Monday, and I'll come right back with Linda Moulton Howe, and we'll take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, speaking of traveling, are you going to be at the Contact in the Desert in Joshua Tree in August?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll be out there too. That's a great event, by the way.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that, and the MUFON International Conference is July 18th to the 20th. That's in Cherry Hills, New Jersey, and then it's August 8 to 10 at Contact in Joshua.
That's right. Why don't you do a little phoner for us at MUFON? Just give us a quick little synopsis of what's going on out there when you're there.
Yeah, happy to.
All right, great. Let's go back to some final calls here in the last remaining half hour. We have Larry is in Muncie, Indiana. Hey, Larry, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Good to have you with us, Larry.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm not sure it's related to the topic you're talking about now. I just wanted to relate to you a couple experiences I had with a supernatural entity. I don't know exactly what it was, but I had two separate experiences with it.
What happened?
The first was in, I believe, around 1988. I was a Christian at the time. I went to bed, left the door in to the living room open, my bedroom door, so I could see the light in the living room. I went to sleep. I woke up. Something woke me up. I seen the lights in the living room blinking. They went out. My door slammed shut. And there was this tall, darker than dark thing standing at the end of my bed with like a long black coat and a hat. I'd been taught, if you rebuke the devil in the name of Jesus, that they tremble at the name of Jesus. Well, I said it three times. I rebuke you in the name of Jesus. I rebuke you in the name of Jesus. He laughed at me and then was gone. I woke up covered in sweat. And I had no preconceptions on what I thought. Demons would be red with a tail or horns or whatever. I'd never heard anybody talk about these black, whatever, shadow people or whatever you want to call them. And then I quit going to church, and about, I think, 7 or 8 years later, I was with a friend. We were just in an alley and seeing the same thing. This time we both seen him together. I was awake at the time, same exact thing. Tall black coat with a hat walking down the alley. This time I wasn't as scared as I was when I was alone, but I'm just curious what your take is on that and if you think it's related to any of these other UFOs, Bigfoot, or whatever.
Interesting.
Yes.
Take, Linda. Go ahead.
Yes. In William Bamford wrote a beautiful book about 15 some years ago, The Gods of Eden. And in it, he had a chapter about the plague, the big bubonic plague that took out millions of people in Europe. And village after village, there were all kinds of reports. They're in diaries, they are in official city documents that talk about people seeing a tall, black-caped, black-hat figure that was walking through the village with something that looked like a rod going back and forth, and they could see something spraying out of the rod.
Huh.
And the very next day, that's when the village people would start becoming sick. And his book is looking at history and these links between the presence of something in the non-human and events, whether it's war, plague, whatever. And so this particular figure is very interesting. And back in, I think it was in the 1960s, there was an encyclopedia, and I don't know what the year was. I read this with my own eyes in a college library. I was doing some sort of a report having to do with Thomas Jefferson and the writing of the Bill of Rights and all of that. And the story was in a library, in an encyclopedia, about how Thomas Jefferson had reported that he was out in the garden, he was working on the Bill of Rights, and a tall, black, cloaked figure with a black hat or cloak over the head, came into his garden and laid down in front of Thomas Jefferson the truncated pyramid with the eye in the upper part, the 13 layers, and said, "This will be the symbol of your nation," and left as rapidly as he came. Well, who are these tall, black-cloaked, black-hooded figures that dot throughout history? Are they non-humans in these cloaks? And did you...
Or time travelers.
And time travelers are all part of this as well. Are you the gentleman talking? Do you think you were actually dealing with something in an evil, quote-unquote, category, or were you dealing with a straightforward extraterrestrial, one of those that wears the cloaks and the hat, and they're tall, but you don't really know what their agenda is? If he's still on the line,
evil. He laughed. It was an evil laugh. I was just frozen with fear. The second time, when I was actually awake, I had a friend and a witness who I'd told friends about my first experience. So it was great having somebody there to actually see the exact same thing I'd seen.
Sure.
And that time, he didn't seem as scary. He seemed more evasive that time, like he didn't want to be seen. So I really don't know.
Well, welcome to what I call the Hall of Mirrors or the quicksand floor. There are so many descriptions by so many credible, down-to-earth people who have encountered standing up alligators while they're riding a horse on a ranch in Colorado, or the menagerie of gray-skinned different types that can go 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet, 5 feet, up to 7 feet, and then the blondes that can be 5 feet or 7 to 8 feet tall, and the tall whites that Charles Hall talked about, more in the albino category. And this list seems to go on so long that the issue of agenda, that's what we need to know. Does our government understand who all the players are, whether they are all from other solar systems in this universe? How many are time travelers, possibly? Which ones are time travelers? Which are from other dimensions, like in the Chani material? That it is a much more complex universe than we have been taught. And when you go into the abduction literature, and I've been exposed to so many, and in my second book, or third book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, I have a whole section with people who were dealing with a variety of different types of entities. And in one, a woman articulates as clearly as so many have said that she gets this telepathic download from one of the beings that there are so many more dimensions than humans understand, that dimensions are affected by other dimensions, which is similar to what the Chani material in South Africa says, and that we have not understood when we exploded atomic bombs in 1945 that we were literally tearing in to some other dimensions, and it set off alarm bells, and that what has been interacting with our planet maybe for 270 million years, they may have had terraforming, mining, and genetic manipulation agendas. And things that have shown up since 1945 and are exploding the bomb, they may have whole other reasons of survival because of something our explosion in this dimension did to their dimension. This is how complex this is, and that what you have seen may or may not fall into those categories, but it sounds to me, listening to you tonight, that you're strong enough to stand on your own 2 feet as a human being and deal with it. And I commend you for doing that.
Let's go to Mark now in Detroit, Michigan. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning.
Yeah, thanks.
Hello, Mr. Norrie. How are you?
Good, Mark. Thank you.
I'm all right. Thanks. I'm calling on account of I've called you before about that story, what happened to me with the blue beam light hit me, and then after it hit me, it downloaded me, and as I was thinking, it was thinking inside of me first before I could think about it, for me to even think, like, what is this? And what I was saying is, when the light was on me, I couldn't move, and so I was in awe when I finally took my eyes on it. And as I was saying to myself in my mind, because I couldn't holler anymore, it was like saying, I said, I know I ain't standing in the light. It said, yes, you are. And I'm like, what? And I said, I know I'm not being illuminated. It said, yes, you are, not knowing where these thoughts coming from first. And then I said, I know I'm not brilliant. It said, yes, you are. Took the light off of me, shot up off me just like it did over on the pyramid, I mean, on the Dome of the Rock over in Egypt, Israel, and shot up in the sky about 5,000-10,000 feet, stopped, and then turned once right and turned into a fireball, and the sky turned into Avatar blue, and it turned into a red sky, and then it turned into all daylight all over Canada, all behind the Renaissance Center, and then it turned again. And then those chemtrail clouds that break up at night, they were parted like an elevator upside down, me looking up, and parted all the way open. And a black, just total black circle came from out of nowhere. And then as the other light that was on me turned again into another ball of red light, it dissipated. But at the same time, as it dissipated, the sky turned back to Avatar blue, to red, and then to bright daylight. And then then everything lightening again, and then the sky closed back up. And I'm looking at the sky where it was beaming at me. It was a big ball of cloud of where a perfect circle had been, like there, like it was
like
somebody
a
was
donut.
Smoking a cigarette.
Sounds like a perfect classic case, Linda and Mark, of a UFO episode cloaking itself, doesn't it?
Or a dimensional opening.
Can't rule that out. That's hard to perceive.
Right.
But, you know, I had David Pilatus in right before you came on talking about missing people at parks. And, you know, he won't say, but it sounds to me that he's thinking of some kind of dimensional portal or something.
Or just straightforward matter being beamed up into craft. We just don't know. But I will tell you, one of the most dramatic descriptions that seems to me to fit into this idea that our dimension can interact with another dimension or vice versa. I was in Puerto Rico. I was visiting, doing research having to do with the chupacabra and animal mutilations and a whole lot of things that were happening. And this was 1996. And one afternoon, I was on a kind of like a terrace where you could have some food, but it was right on the water, looking right out into the big water. And one of the people that I was with had lived there most of their life and said, you know, I was sitting here, and it was like 30 years before, and I saw this with my own eyes. There was, I looked like a gray sky, a little foggy, but suddenly a black rectangle, this is the way they described it, a solid black rectangle, as geometric as any rectangle, just suddenly appeared in this sort of gray, foggy sky that was close to the horizon. And to their complete and total astonishment, and they're sitting there with other people. That was the thing. There's other people watching this.
Yeah.
A huge, he said, maybe a half a mile long craft, round or disc-like, but had layers to it. This was not like the simple lens shape. This was a layered craft of some sort, comes right out of this solid black rectangle there in the water near Puerto Rico, and came right to toward them, and then just blinked out. Now, I think that when you've got multiple witnesses in a day like that, and you've got that kind of a vivid black rectangle, something is going on that is not normal terrestrial, and that even though science fiction has been where most people have said, when people describe triangles or rectangles of light, whether it's white light, black light, or something opening up in the sky, people have always said, no, that's science fiction. Well, halt. I think that there are too many very just down-to-earth people who have seen these things, whether it's Peru, Puerto Rico, Egypt, and I think they're trying to describe what they have seen, and that it means our definition of reality on this planet is not accommodating everything that can happen, which goes to the Chani material. what happens if there is some sort of dimensional rubbing the shoulder overlap in a cosmos that we still don't even understand what dark matter and dark energy are in our own universe.
Yeah, and we may never. We may never. Let's see if we can get one more call in. Tommy in Knoxville, Pennsylvania. Tommy, not a lot of time, but go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep, sure can.
Hey, just to let you know, the last time David was on your show, you had a guest host, and he was talking about the mountains, and I called in to talk about a noise that I heard, and it was a trumpeting noise. It was extreme. It was in the Smoky Mountains. On the night of a new moon, I would always go up on the top of this mountain by myself and meditate all night long and watch the sunrise.
I'm going to ask you to email Linda, because we're out of time, at earthfiles@earthfiles.com.
Thank you.
She could use that information indeed. Linda, you take care. We'll talk to you next month again, okay?
Thank you.
Linda Moulton Howe, our investigative reporter, she goes out and digs up those incredible stories of high strangeness. And like I mentioned, I'm going to be at the International Remote Viewing Conference in Nevada. So Dave Schrader will be manning the desk for us tomorrow. Looking forward to meeting some incredible people, Paul Smith, John Alexander, many regular Coast to Coast guests who have done just an absolutely superb job for us. And also, don't forget, if you're not a Coast Insider, sign up for it. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com. And also, download the free apps, if you would, the iPhone apps and the Android apps. Grab them for your smartphone, put them there, and enjoy it, play around with it, and get to know how it works. I shall see you on Monday. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.